Welcome to today's podcast. My name is Per LeBrewer, and I will be your host. Today's podcast guest is Belinda Kumar, who is a manager in claims management at WorkSafe NV. Belinda is here to talk to us about the New Brunswick Workers' Compensation System. Welcome, Belinda.
Thanks, Brian.
Glad to have you. Over the last decade, I have delivered a variety of workshops around New Brunswick. During these workshops, I have continually been asked questions about how the workers' compensation system works. So today, we're going to try to answer those questions. We're going to use a different format today in our podcast, and we're going to present a fictitious employee and then guide them through the workers' compensation process as to what they can expect should they get injured on the job. Our fictitious employee, we will call Mark, was injured today in a fall at his workplace. He was working approximately 15 feet off the floor in the organization's warehouse, and although he knew he should have been wearing a harness, he wasn't. He fell and injured his back and shattered his left leg. The company has just called 911, and we'll take it up from there. We're going to follow Mark and ask a number of questions as to what Mark can expect during the next few months until hopefully he is able to get back to work. At this point, all Mark really knows is that he fell and he is in a lot of pain. Today, that is all that is on his mind. But tomorrow, he will have a lot of questions. He has never been injured on the job before, so he has absolutely no idea what to expect. The ambulance has now arrived, and he will be transported to the Dr. Everett Chalmers Hospital here in Fredericton. Once examined, it is discovered that he has, in fact, injured his back and shattered his left leg. He and his wife have been told that he will require a number of surgeries on his leg. His back injury will simply take time to heal. It appears to be a muscle strain-related injury to his back. Now, let's talk about what Mark's journey to the workers' compensation system over the next few months will look like. So, Belinda, firstly, in general terms, explain what the workers' compensation system here in New Brunswick is designed to do.
Absolutely. So, you know, the system and WorkSafe NV, we're really here to promote, you know, healthy and safe workplaces for workers and employers. And our priority is really preventing workplace injuries. We provide rehabilitation services and compensation benefits when injuries do occur. We're accountable to our stakeholders, you know, when it comes to the legislation that we have to administer. And I think all of that to say, you know, we're really here to support injured workers, whether they have loss of earnings or medical costs related to injuries that happen at work. It's a system that's paid into by all employers, so it's a collective liability system where they all pay into the system, and it's a no-fault system. You know, of interest to your listeners, they might be interested in knowing that we serve 15,000 registered employers and 355,000 workers in New Brunswick. And last year alone, so in 2022, there was about 4,500 lost time claims, so people like actually lost time because of their injury, and then 2,000 no lost time claims.
Now, one question I get asked a lot is people say to me, well, if I get injured, I am going to refuse workers' compensation and I am going to sue. They watch a lot of TV in the evenings, of course, and especially it's American TV. So, of course, they become, I guess, more familiar with the American system than they do here in Canada. So they firmly believe that if they do get injured, you know, they can sue the employer and get a pot of money. What's your comment on that?
So that's not an option that's available here, right? And so that's the premise of the system. You know, all employers pay into the system, so they've got that collective liability. And because it is that no-fault system, you know, workers don't have the ability to sue an employer in these cases here.
Yeah, and that's one important point I want to make sure our listeners really do understand, because it is so critical that people don't have an expectation that, look, if I do get injured, oh, there's a pot of money there waiting. No, folks, there's no pot of money. We're not the American system. We're the Canadian system. So to continue our journey here, the next morning, despite still being in a lot of pain and feeling groggy, Mark starts to panic about a situation and the realization of the situation that he's in. Now both he and his wife start to wonder what will happen next. What will they do for income? What about all the accident costs? What if his employer simply cuts him loose? So many questions, and of course, he wants some answers, would make him feel a whole lot better. So question two to you, Belinda, is this. Mark knows he should have been wearing a harness to prevent a fall, but he wasn't. Will that keep him from being able to collect workers' compensation?
So I think it's important to note, so everyone does have a role in safety, so employers and each and every employee. However, when an accident does occur, regardless of who's at fault, because I mentioned earlier, it's a no-fault system, if the claim is accepted, he still will be entitled to coverage.
Okay. Is there any paperwork that needs to be filled out by either him or his employer to apply for benefits and to open his claim? What's the process there?
Yes, no, there definitely is paperwork. People might have heard of something called the Form 67 or the Form 67. That used to be a joint form that workers and employers had to fill out together. But in an effort to make that simpler, we've now split those two forms. So we've got the Form 6, which is called the Application for Workers' Compensation Benefits for Workers, and then the Form 7, which is the Employer Report of Injury or Illness. So on Mark's form, he has to fill out things like details of his accident, what's his contact information, you know, who is his employer, if he went, you know, when he went to the hospital, who did he see, what other medical information does he have that's available based on, you know, his injury. Information on his income, and then payment information. So if his claim is accepted, we can then process payment once we get to that point in the claim. The Form 7 from the employer, they've got to put down, you know, when were they notified? What details do they have on the accident, the injury? What details do they have on Mark's earnings, his hours of work? Any details that they have on modified work that might be available? What duties could they have for Mark if he had to come back, and when he can come back? So those forms are available on our website, or you can call the 1-800 number. We can mail copies of forms to people if they need access to them. Once they're completed, they can be submitted in a variety of ways. People can email them, they can mail them. We still take fax, so they can fax them in. We've got some online portals that workers and employers can use as well. So you've got a My Services portal for workers and employers. And then employers can also use our Service New Brunswick portal as well, so to submit those.
So why is it important that Mark and the employer get the paperwork in as soon as possible?
Well, I guess the sooner we get it in, the sooner we can then look at it and review and determine whether or not the claim is acceptable. And I think, you know, it's important when you have an injury and something happens right away, at that time, that's when you have all the information, right? So I think it's more relevant. It's, you know, the details because it just happened. So as soon as we get it in, the better we can then begin to process and look at the claim.
Will his claim be automatically accepted, or is there criteria for acceptance?
Yeah, so claims aren't automatically accepted. There definitely is criteria. We've got an intake and adjudication team that reviews all applications for claims, so they will go through the process of reviewing that information. You know, assuming some things, you know, that, you know, the employer is registered, all the paperwork is received in the right timelines, and, you know, Mark meets the definition of worker. There's three real main criteria, I think, that we want to focus on. So there has to be an injury. So, you know, so in Mark's case, you indicated he said he had a shattered left leg and he had a muscle strain to his back. So we look at the medical evidence to say what was the injury that happened. Then we would look at the event. So what was the accident? You know, an accident is really clearly defined in the Workers' Compensation Act. And so we just say, okay, what event have you described? Does it meet that definition? And then the accident itself has to, we call, arise out of and in the course of employment. And I know that's not how we normally talk, but that's how it's written in our legislation. And what that really means is we look at three things. We look at the time, the place, and the activity related to the accident. So, you know, what activity was Mark performing at the time of the accident? And was that work related? The time that the accident took place, you know, was he there during his regular hours of work or was he there after hours? If he was there after hours, why was he there after hours? We would ask some of those types of questions. And then was the place consistent with his employment? So in Mark's case, you indicated he was at the warehouse, so that's his employer's premise, but we do have some people who travel for work, you know, so were they at a site that was consistent with where they normally work or were they somewhere else? And so those types of things we all have to review to determine whether or not a claim is acceptable.
Now, one question I often get asked is people will say, look, I cut my hand the other day at work. I went up to the hospital. And the first question they asked, where did this happen? Mm-hmm. And people say, well, why do they want to know that? What's your answer there?
Well, I think they want to know that because if it is a workplace accident, they would then submit that paperwork to us. You know, we would get access to that type of information. If you get hurt at home, you know, that stuff would be billed through Medicare. But if it is something that happens on the workplace, there's the potential that, you know, if it's an acceptable claim, we would cover it. So it gives them the information they need on where to send that information.
So all the medical costs that's going to be incurred by Mark over the next period of time, doctors, visits, you name it, the list goes on and on. Who's going to pay those bills?
Absolutely. So, you know, we call that medical aid. And so, you know, medical aid that he needs for the purpose of that injury that he had at work is usually covered. It's not a blanket coverage. Like, we don't open a claim and go, all of your medical costs are covered. We do have to review them. But for the most part, you could say that, you know, common treatments, you know, medications, certain types of rehab are all covered as part of his claim. But we do make a decision on a case-by-case basis based on the information that's in front of us. You know, but a good example in Mark's case, you mentioned he's going to have some surgeries. Those surgeries will probably be covered. If he, you know, after he has a surgery, he needs like a walking boot or some crutches, those will probably be covered. He needs to have physiotherapy. That type of stuff will be covered, right? And so not for him to worry, like those decisions will be made. He'll know up front whether or not we're going to support them or not. So.
Okay. How much will Mark get paid while on workers' compensation? And I guess it's certainly very much important in this day and age where a lot of people live paycheck to paycheck. How long is it going to take him to get that first paycheck?
Absolutely. So when you're on workers' compensation benefits, you make up to 85% of your pre-accident net earnings. So the stuff that gets you actually get in your paycheck, so not your gross, but your net. There is a maximum for every year. So the maximum for 2023 was $74,800. So if Mark made more than that, he would only get up to the max. If he made less than that, he would get up to his level, so 85% of his pre-accident net. The target to first check is 2 weeks from the time the claim gets accepted. So there is a period of time there where, you know, we're going to review all the information that's sent in to determine if Mark's claim is acceptable. And then if it is, once that happens, it goes off to our benefit payments department, and their goal was within 2 weeks to issue that first check, and then he would get paid on a biweekly basis.
So that's why, really, to go back to our question about is it important to get those forms in soon as possible. The sooner you get the forms, the sooner you can start the process. Absolutely. If you have to go chasing a form, then that's going to delay the whole process.
That's right, yeah. And so the more we have to chase for, if we don't have complete forms, that's it's really important to make sure the forms have all the information on them, because the more information we have, then the quicker we can get to this part as well.
Now, Mark and his wife have a lot of questions about the workers' compensation system, what they should expect. They're getting lots of advice from different places, friends, family, maybe even their own family doctor. At times like that, if people have never been exposed to that kind of injury in the medical system, it can get really challenging. So is there anyone at WorkSafe that they can turn to help guide them through this process, guide them through their questions?
Absolutely. You know, it's all throughout the claim process, they're going to have a connection here, right? So they can call and ask whoever it is they're dealing with. We've got an inquiries team. But I wanted to kind of focus on, once his claim is accepted and he continues to be off work, he will be transferred to a case manager. So he'll have a one point of contact throughout the journey of his claim, right? And their role really is to help navigate that process, answer the questions. They're that point of contact between him and his doctor and his other treatment providers and even his employer, to make sure that everyone knows what the next steps are, to make sure that we're sharing information, that everyone knows, you know, maybe he's got treatment or maybe there's a planned return to work, all of that kind of stuff. So they're really there as that one point of contact, and I think they're a valuable resource for Mark and his family throughout the journey of his claim.
So once Mark's had some surgeries and we move down the road, so to speak, what can Mark expect as far as a rehabilitation plan? So, you know, he's starting to think, maybe when will he be able to get back to work? And, you know, is it 3 months, 6 months, whatever?
Absolutely. You know, like, so one of our goals is really about safe and early return to work when possible, but everyone's journey is different, right? And so we're going to follow the recommendations from Mark's treatment team. We've got teams here that look at files, and so we'll have some recommendations and put a plan in place, but it will be unique to Mark. You know, I thought of a few different things that potentially could happen for him. You know, he's got a strain to his back, so maybe he'd go into a back management physiotherapy program. So we might connect him with a physiotherapy clinic that offers that program, so he could do that as part of his treatment. His employer could potentially offer some modified duties. You know, we talk a lot about getting back as part of getting better, the importance of remaining connected to your workplace and to your work and your colleagues and people that you see on a regular basis. So maybe he does some modified duties with his employer, but then he also does some treatment part of the day. So there could be a combination that happens there, right? When he's able to get back and we have recommendations, he could do a gradual return to work. Maybe he goes back partial duties and partial hours, right? And we would really incorporate, you know, other people into his treatment team. So an occupational therapist would come in and make some recommendations and support him through that, and gradually progress him as his restrictions change and whatever his needs might be. And I think it's just important to point out that, you know, this could change depending on where he's at. If he starts to go back to work and then all of a sudden he's got perhaps a flare up or he needs to have another surgery and he has to go off for a while, we can pivot depending on what his needs are. But the goal, obviously, we're always looking at getting him back to work safely, right? And so just depends on what his needs are and how his injury progresses through recovery.
Now, Mark has talked to a friend of his who injured himself on the job a decade ago, and he did some of his rehabilitation at the Grand Bay Rehab Center. Now, today, things obviously have changed in their society. What's your comment there? Where do people want to receive their services to help get them back to work?
I think, you know, we've put a focus on making sure people get services closer to home. You know, we've recently, you know, stopped our programming at the WRC, right? And I think it's important that people have access to that family support and they stay in their community when and if possible. So I think that's important that we're definitely working with our service provider network to expand it, to making sure we have services for everyone, you know, across the province.
Yeah. One of the things I want to highlight, too, is you talk about the importance of staying connected. And I guess really for a long time, I didn't understand that. And I guess really that's so key to your process, isn't it? You want them to stay connected to the employer, because if they just simply go home and cut off that connection, the recovery is a lot longer.
Absolutely. And I think it's important that, you know, you talk to your employer and employers talk to the workers and you keep that connection, because that's a big part of people's lives. We spend a lot of our time at work, right? And I think that connection is key, getting back in there, even if it might not be the job that you were doing when you got injured, but even just doing parts of it, it provides some purpose for people, right? And so I think it is really important, that connection component.
So Mark thinks his employer is pretty understanding, but Mark is starting to realize that he may be off work for a period of time, maybe 6 months or longer. Is the employer required to keep his job for him?
So, yes, so employers do have an obligation, one, to provide early and safe return to work, but they also have a duty to reemploy an injured worker. So as long as the worker has been employed for 12 continuous months at the time of the accident, they do have that reemployment obligation, and that remains in place for 1 year if they have less than 20 employees, and 2 years if they have 20 or more employees.
Okay. What about other costs while Mark's recovering? You know, we're probably a month and a half, 2 months away from winter, for example, snow shoveling and so on. And if Mark's not able to do those kinds of tasks himself, how are those kind of situations handled?
Yeah, no, absolutely. We've got policy provisions for something we call home care and independence, and it helps offset the costs for things such as like home care needs, like meal prep and cleaning, but home maintenance is also included. So like lawn care and snow removal, that type of thing. We would have an assessment done by an occupational therapist. They would meet with Mark, or they would call him on the phone and review what his needs were, and they would provide recommendations to us as to what they think he needs assistance with. That can be available, you know, in the early phase of recovery. So Mark was admitted to the hospital, so maybe before he leaves hospital, we do an evaluation. Or when he has a surgery, we kind of evaluate then maybe what his needs are. And then as he recovers, you know, eventually those kind of go away. But there are some cases where if there's like a long-term limitation that stays because the disability remains severe or prolonged, those things could continue for a lot longer.
So what happens if Mark cannot go back to his old job? What are his options at that point?
So there's a few different things that happen. You know, when we determine that they've got a permanent restriction, so something that's keeping them from going back to their old job, we would first go to the accident employer and say, can you accommodate? Is there something you can do to modify Mark's old job? Do you have another job available that would be in keeping with what his restrictions were? So we always start there. In the event that they can't accommodate him, we do have a workforce reentry team, and their role is really to evaluate and determine, is there another job out there that Mark's capable of? And we would look at a variety of things. You know, what is Mark's education? What's his previous experience? What type of work has he done in the past? What are his areas of interest? So all of those things would go into that planning to determine what would be an appropriate job for him in the future that he's capable of, in keeping with whatever his restrictions might be. They provide things like job search assistance. We could do resume preparation. In some cases, we do look at retraining for injured workers if appropriate. Not in all cases, but that is something we can also look at as well. I think it's really just important to note that our obligation is to find, to determine, I guess, what that suitable job would be, what else they're capable of, not to find the job. So once we make that determination of what he's capable of, that would impact what he's eligible for from a benefits perspective. So if he's capable of something that pays equal to or more than what he was paid when he got hurt, then there's no long-term benefit that's provided to him. If we determine it pays less, then he might be entitled to a partial long-term disability award. Or we could make the determination that he's not capable of going back to work at all, and so then he could be entitled to a full long-term disability award. So there's a variety of things that happen, and like, you know, a lot of this is case by case, and it depends on, you know, Mark's recovery and what the injury is and all of that type of stuff. But just for people to know, I think it's important that there are multiple pathways that take place depending on the claim and the details associated with them.
So along the way during his journey, what happens at some point, or at any point, I should say, if Mark disagrees with what he's being told by a case manager as far as a medical cost, any item? Does he have any recourse or any options?
Yeah, he absolutely does. I like to think that there's lots of support to make sure that, you know, clients get fair decisions, both workers and employers. So he can go. We've got an internal decision review office. We call them the DRO. And so any decision can be reviewed by them. The client has 90 days from any decision to request that review with the DRO. If they're not happy with the decision that's made there, they can then go to the Workers' Compensation Appeals Tribunal. They have 1 year from the date of the DRO decision to go there. Timelines for both of those are slightly different, but the DRO decisions, they are made within 4 weeks of the request for review. A WCAT decision, once the hearing is scheduled, is issued within 90 days. So there's a few different options there for clients. We do have also an internal client service specialist. If there's like a service complaint, if Mark's not happy with the service that he's getting, he can reach out to them and they can investigate that complaint as well. And I would like to point out, you know, we've got, there's the Department of Advocate Services through the Department of Post-Secondary Education, Training and Labor, and they've got workers advocates and employers advocates. You know, in another life, I was a workers advocate, so I'm very familiar with this service, and they're there to help Mark and families like him navigate through that process. They can assist with the reviews. They can assist with the appeals. They can even answer questions related to the decisions that Mark might not be happy with. So I would encourage people to reach out there, because that's a free service that's available for folks as well.
So how many years have you been working in the workers' compensation system?
So I've been with WorkSafe for 8 years, and then I was a workers' advocate for 3 years prior to that.
So based on your experience, what's one thing you wished all New Brunswickers knew about the workers' compensation system before they're injured?
I think, you know, it's one of those things that this system is really here to help. You know, we do have some things that guide us, like legislation and policy, you know, drive us towards where we go and the decisions that we make. But no experience is the same. You know, people often share stories. We talk a little bit about that, you know, that you might hear something from someone, this is what happened with them. But it's not going to be the same for everybody. And so I think it's important that people educate themselves. You know, you often don't know about the system until you have to use it. So take some time and learn a little bit about what's out there. You know, we've got a lot of resources on our website that people can go to. And I think just to know too that, you know, us as an organization, so WorkSafe MB is really working hard on modernizing to make sure we've got that kind of experience that's the best it can be for everybody. So workers, employers, even us as employees. And we want to really make sure that people know that there's support there when they do have these accidents and injuries. No one goes to work expecting to get hurt, right? And it's not something that anyone, it's not an enjoyable experience for anybody, but there is a system here to support you and to give you what you need.
Well, look, Belinda, thank you very much for joining us for today's podcast. Information you provided, very, very valuable to our listeners. As I mentioned in the introduction, unfortunately, a lot of people really have very little, if any, knowledge of the system. And you've certainly provided, I think, people with a road path this morning to give folks a sense of what they could expect. Thank you very much for joining us on today's podcast. Again, thank you to Belinda for joining us. You can always reach us at podcast@ssnb.ca. Stay safe. We will see you next week.